is the correct Ravens running back to draft this season? What tight end should you be drafting in the sixth round of FFPC leagues? And is Brandon Cook's ADP in line with his 2016 projected production? Plus 2016 FFPC Pros versus Joe's competitor and former main event league champ Paul Miley hangs out with us to discuss his favorite draft slot to be picking from this year, how he is viewing the end of season numbers for Jeremy Langford and Jordan Howard, and how he's drafting Bengals pass catchers in light of the reports on Tyler Eifert. We've got a great show for you. Dave Gerzak is here. I'm Eric Falkman. Stick around. Your High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour starts now.
Broadcast live and heard around the world, you are now listening to the most entertaining hour of radio on the planet. It's the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com with your hosts Eric Balkman and Dave Gerzak. The High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour is your home for football analysis from the best fantasy players in the world. And now, because no one else was available, here are Eric Balkman and Dave Gerzak.
Until I die, ask me why I'm a boss player getting high. And when I'm rolling by, you can't see me. The stairs of a million pairs of eyes. And you'll never.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Greetings and salutations, all you Balkaholics and Gerzak and addicts. Welcome to the latest episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com. I'm your slightly above average host, Eric Balkman, and my co-host is the Dizzle, the patron saint of fantasy football, Dave Gerzak. Coming up on tonight's show, we'll debate how Patriots' draft values change with the Tom Brady report and whether Adrian Peterson truly is on the downside of his career. Plus, Paul Miley, a former main event league champion in the Fantasy Football Players Championship, joins us to discuss Rashad Jennings' value and how he's attacking his pros versus Joe's draft, selecting next to the defending champ, Jake Seeley from RotoExperts.com, coming up at the end of the month. Shout out to the chat room right now. You guys can post any questions you might have in there. If you want to connect with us on Twitter, we are at HSFFHour, at Eric Balkman, at David Gerzak. You can also connect with Paul Miley on Twitter at Gunny52. That's GUNNY52. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/thehighstakesfantasyfootballer. If you want to give us a call tonight, 347-426-3682. That's 347-GAME-OVA. The inbox is also highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com. Our producer and mutual friend Rob and audio engineer Bryce getting all those questions to us later on in the fantasy feedback segment later on in the show. Dave, all the rage in the fantasy football industry this week was the Scott Fish Bowl. It was one of the top trending topics on Twitter most of the week, which actually FFP.
On all of Twitter or
yes,
just
on all of Twitter? On all of Twitter, and this is what Jake Rickrode, I'm serious, it's what Jake Rickrode, FFPC player, is also in the Scott Fish Bowl. He and I were emailing this week, and he said it sort of speaks to the volume of the people, like the presence that is on Twitter by these 480 players and industry experts, you know, in the Scott Fish Bowl. One draft, there's a couple of RotoViz guys in it. I don't know who else was in it. They were done in 50 hours.
They're done.
22 rounds, 12 players, 50 hours, something for the FFPC players to shoot for. I guess it beat the previous Scott Fish Bowl record of 75 hours by 25 hours. So,
oh, that's crazy.
What round are you guys in right now?
We're at the end of the eighth.
We just started I think we're in the mid-seventh, so somewhere like that. How's your team looking?
It's a disaster.
We had Devontae Freeman. Actually, we have an email about this later on the show. He slipped to the 212 for myself and Draft Sharks Matt Schauff.
And you reached for him?
And yeah, we didn't reach for him. Anthony Amico from RotoViz, who's drafting in the middle of our draft, said that he considered him at the 206 and said that I scooped him up at the 212. And Jake Rickrode again chimed in. He's like, oh, that Eric Balkman, he's a shark. He's an absolute shark, lampooning as a podcast host. And Amico from RotoViz said, I've been a Balkaholic for years. I know,
oh, man.
Which was great. And not only did it stroke my ego, it's 100% accurate, Dave.
So true.
So it's fun. You can actually check out on my Twitter feed. I'm posting all the picks I have on there of who I'm drafting. Totally different setup than the FFPC. If you want to really get a handle on how the industry experts and the FFPC players are handling live drafts, redrafts this year, listen to the live broadcast on Pros vs. Joe's. First one's coming up on July 24th. Special announcement on that. I have guest hosts lined up for the first three because you will not be here.
Interesting. Nice.
Well, I technically have two lined up. The third one is a 75%. He's committed. So
cool.
So that's very cool. And we're going to do all six of those as well. Let's get to some fantasy football analysis. Football guys, Roto World and Rob were kind enough to prep tonight's rundown. So let's get into it. Shockingly enough, no Cleveland Browns news in the rundown tonight, Dave.
Oh, thank God.
Which I'm sure you would appreciate.
The Crowell story, that's good.
Yeah, I don't know what to glean from that, as long as you bring it up. To me, there's no fantasy. They're not. They say they're not going to cut him, and I think that's all the extent of what we should care about from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll leave it alone.
Okay. Carlos Williams. Fat Carlos Williams showed up to minicamp, 20 to 25 pounds overweight.
Dude, let me interrupt. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And he was not a small guy to begin with. So he is he's carrying some weight on him. Rex Ryan said that they want to set a weight loss goal for Williams by the start of training camp, which means he's probably not going to be practicing football when training camp starts. He's going to be conditioning. This is according to the Buffalo News. Carlos Williams facing competition from the likes of Mike Gillisley,
yes,
and Jonathan Williams. Now, Williams is a fifth-round pick this year out of Arkansas. Was injured all of his senior year, I believe. And that's sort of why Alex Collins got a lot of pub, because he stepped up into the starting running back role for Arkansas. But Williams had a great junior year. He is a talented running back, powerful and instinctive with the ball, according to Football Guys. Could be a three-down back in the NFL. When you look at the Bills running back situation, Dave, two-part question. First part,
yep.
If you draft LeSean McCoy, are you looking to handcuff him post-10th round?
As we get further into training camp, I guess if Williams emerges, then I would consider it. But otherwise, not really. And look, that's a lot of weight for Carlos Williams. I would not draft Carlos Williams at this point. He's kind of like off my draft board. If he was like 10 pounds overweight, that's fine. I mean, 25 pounds. I mean, he's going to have to start, like, low-carbing, like, yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe he has. Hopefully he has.
Because you can only exercise it off so much. You
right.
You know what I mean?
He says it was because of his pregnant wife, the whole comfort aspect of it, where she wants something he eats, and then he eats with her. So,
you're a professional athlete.
I know. Listen, you are preaching to the converted, my friend.
You make your living doing that. You're like Hugh Jackman, like, getting fat before one of his, like, Wolverine roles.
Well, he does, I think, massively increases calories, but then he works out like a fiend because he always bulks, gets his upper body super shredded.
Yeah, and he injects himself with testosterone, siphonate, probably, like, a couple 300 milligrams a week.
No comment. I'll say this about Carlos Williams right now. He's going in the 11th to 12th round of FFPC in Football Guys redraft leagues. Jonathan Williams is not being drafted, and Mike Gillisley will never be drafted again, in my opinion. He's just not a good football player. If you draft LeSean McCoy, get a good handcuff, not the Bills handcuff. Get Devontae Booker or somebody, Jerick McKinnon. Get somebody with some substance. Get those handcuffs. Don't waste your time with the Bills handcuffs. Moving on. Right? You agree, right?
Great analysis.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, Justin Forsett is the clear lead dog in the Baltimore backfield, according to BaltimoreRavens.com's Ryan Mink. Forsett is competing with Javorius Buck Allen, Kenneth Dixon, Lorenzo Taliaferro, Terrence West, and my boy, Trent Richardson.
Yeah, T-Rich.
Behind him. Forsett, when he's healthy the last few years, he's been great. He's great, as Donald Trump would say. Justin Forsett, he's great. He's great. Forsett missed the last six games of 2015 with a broken arm. He could catch 70 passes, could be a top 15 fantasy running back this year if he is the lead dog. Sounds like he is. But here's the interesting part, Dave, and this kind of surprised me when I was looking at Football Guys drafts. Justin Forsett and Buck Allen going at that 9-10 turn.
That's
area.
That's super late for Forsett.
Super late. Well, again, but we didn't know.
Right.
This was pre this report.
Right.
Kenneth Dixon going at the 10-11. So the top three running backs all going in the same area. I think with this report, Forsett moves up a couple of rounds. Are you touching Buck Allen or Kenneth Dixon at those prices, though?
Not really. I mean, there's still not, it hasn't been determined really who's going to be ahead. I would guess Buck Allen would get the nod, which would be ahead of who I'd look at.
Do you think that because we had the rookie drafts in the FFPC, God, what was it now, a month and a half ago roughly, do you think that Kenneth Dixon is being overdrafted because of that dynasty
Probably.
Sheen right now to be going at the tunnel? Because he could be the number three back for Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
I think so. And people are drafting Dixon at like the 108, 109, 110 range, right? I mean,
yeah, no, totally. Yeah, that's where he was going.
I'm in like eight dynasty leagues. I got him in zero leagues. I had no interest at all in drafting. Where was he drafted in the NFL draft? Fourth round, fifth round, did you just say?
No, that was Jonathan Williams in the fifth round. I don't remember where. I think Dixon was fourth round. He was not a day two pick.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, the odds of a fourth round pick hitting are like 3%.
Yeah.
You know, they're so insanely low. I get the Forsett's old. What will probably happen is maybe Forsett moves on next year or something. They draft the guy in the first or second round.
Yeah,
Forsett take the job.
Forsett is the guy to get right now. Again, his ADP is going to rise, but even in the seventh round, I think that's solid.
Say his name again.
Forsett. What is it, Forsett?
That seems like...
Well, Justin Forsett? Justin Forsett?
Is it Tony Dorsett?
Who's that?
The former running back from the Cowboys.
Kidding. I'm just kidding. We're having some fun here.
Oh,
we're having fun on the show. Vincent Jackson.
Forsett.
Here's Forsett, okay? I'm going to Forsett this down your throat right now. Vincent Jackson is, and this is a guy I wanted to talk about. Vincent Jackson is, or Forsett?
I don't know. Whatever you just said.
Listen, Forsett means Forsett, Dave.
All right.
Going to be used in the slot, Vincent Jackson, for Tampa Bay this year. If Dante Dye, Kenny Bell, or Russell Shepard can play well enough on the outside for Jackson to go inside. Adam Humphries is going to have his snaps reduced if this is the case. This all according to Roy Cummings' report today in the Tampa Tribune. Kenny Bell, obviously a guy that I would be excited about in a deep draft experts league if you take Vincent Jackson. I think that he's got a lot of natural talent. He's the type of guy that could really step up if given the opportunity. I know Adam Humphries, they seem to be high on. Farrell Elliott, KFFSC commissioner and good friend of the show, was actually talking about Adam Humphries. The reason I bring up Farrell in talking about Vincent Jackson is the Kentucky podcast is back now. Farrell is hosting the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship podcast. First episode was today. I listened to the first half of it, and Farrell says that Vincent Jackson could be this year's Andre Johnson, a guy who just completely falls off the face of the earth, a big receiver, just could not gain separation. What is your opinion on Vincent Jackson, who is going, by the way, in football guys' drafts in the 11th, 12th round area right now?
Oh, man, that's tough. I don't have a strong opinion on that. I mean, I hear what he's saying about Andre Johnson, but Andre Johnson, I think, was going in the fourth round last year. He was going pretty early. In the 11th and 12th, I mean, at that point, it's so cheap. You're looking at a backup tight end there or your second quarterback. I'd have to at least kick around the idea of taking B. Jackson. I don't like, you know, I'm not even, if he's your number six WR, I don't know.
He's a number two receiver on a team that is has an up-and-coming quarterback with an elite option as the number one pass catcher on the team, and question marks at the tight end position. So I think if you look at trying to fill a wide receiver spot in the 11th and 12th round area, I think Vincent Jackson, I'm not going to rip on anybody for taking him there. I think that's especially in a DE, I think for him, I think that is a wise spending of an 11th or 12th round pick.
So what was his deal last year? Why did he suck so bad?
He was dinged up, yeah. Obviously. And you remember, Mike Evans, despite not having a great season last year, had like literally 50 targets every week.
Yeah, I remember that. That one week he had like 14 catches, but he had 22 targets.
It was terrible.
Like, dude, you suck.
Yeah.
You're terrible. I mean, some of the passes were bad, but he was just dropping more in the middle like crazy. I mean, he just kept throwing it to him.
Yeah, I would think the target the targets regressed to the mean a little bit this year with Jackson and Evans. So that's my opinion on how I see the Tampa Bay receivers shaping up this year. We have Paul Miley come up in just a little bit. Before we get to him, big news out of Balghazi, as it were, or Deflategate, however you want to look at it.
Oh, God.
Albert Breer on Twitter says the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals denied New England quarterback Tom Brady's request for a rehearing in his Deflategate. Brady can appeal to the Supreme Court.
It's just so ridiculous.
I don't, you know, it's up in the air whether he will or not. Let's just assume that he does miss the first 4 weeks of the season. You want to get off to a good start in these high stakes and mid stakes tournaments in the Football Guys Players Championship, the main event in the FFPC. Are you dinging Rob Gronkowski, Martellus Bennett, Julian Edelman, any of those receivers based on Brady not being able to throw to them until October, essentially?
Just a little bit. I mean, there is an effect. Garoppolo is not as good as Brady. Brady's awesome. So there's a difference. I mean, if you're in an 11-week regular season, it does make a difference.
You know, again, I don't want to hit the panic button here, I think it is a little concerning, especially, you know, inevitably you're going to hear on like fantasy podcasts and like the ESPN reports and the CBS leagues where they give their fantasy analysis based on like 10-team leagues with super deep roster or super shallow rosters. Should you drop Gronk after week two, after he stinks, you know, something like that? And I think that there is some concern with Garoppolo not being able to perform allowing those players to perform up to par the way that Brady has allowed them to over the past, you know, decade or whatever.
I wouldn't drop him too far.
Right. And I'm not saying you, I don't mean
like, I would still take Gronk. I mean, I would still.
In the first round.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, totally. And I'm not a huge Edelman guy this year. I think he's okay, but I think there's question marks with his health. As we've seen the past couple of years, he's struggled to stay off the training table. So I think if you want to ding Edelman, there's other reasons to do it, you know, rather than Garoppolo not throwing to him. And not to keep bringing up Jake Brickrode, but I will. He actually tweeted out today that when Brady missed the entire season with that ACL, and Matt Tassel had to step in, Randy Moss and Wes Welker actually had very good seasons with Tassel throwing to him. And you could make the case that Garoppolo is actually more talented and a better quarterback than Matt Castle was even at that point in their careers.
I don't really know. You could be arguing a whole different. I mean, the only thing that's the same is the system and the coaching, which you have to grant that that does make a difference. But Moss, Castle are much different than Garoppolo and Edelman. I mean, it's just, I don't think it's really has a whole lot to do with one.
Okay.
Other than the fact that the team, it's well-coached. They're going to prepare properly. Garoppolo is probably going to be ready, and he's probably going to have some good games.
Still think Martellus Bennett is a good buy, even with this news. And we honestly, they've sort of been drafting Tom Brady and these Patriots running backs or Patriots receivers like Brady was missing the first month of the season anyway. You know, so that was sort of already baked into their ADP.
It was baked in.
Let's take a quick break here, Dave, now that the Fantasy Flash is over with. We're going to bring in Paul Miley right after this. You're listening to the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. I'm Eric Baughman. He's Dave Gerzak. We're coming back right after these messages. Welcome back to the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. My name is Eric Baughman. My co-host is Saint Dizzle, the patron saint of fantasy football, Dave Gerzak. We're bringing in tonight's guest. Let's welcome him in. He began his high stakes career in the 2005 World Championship of Fantasy Football, and in 2007 joined forces with his current Sven and O-League co-manager, Arnie Grabanowski, playing in the FFPC since its start in 2008. He won the main event's consolation round in 2013 as well as the FFWC's consolation round last season. He's a former main event league title winner in the FFPC and will look to bring the Pros versus Joes title back to the Joes when he drafts in the PBJ event at the end of the month. Please welcome into the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour, Mr. Paul Miley. Paul, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks for having me.
Very excited to have a guy who's been playing in the FFPC since 2008 on the show tonight, a guy who's been with the FFPC through the thick and the thick, as it were, over the past few years. So awesome to have you on. Paul, tell the listeners what you do for a living when you're not playing fantasy football.
Oh, did he
we just lost him.
Did
Paul,
you hang up on him?
Yeah, I didn't hang up on him. It's just the call dropped. Paul will give us a call back shortly. Pretty awesome. Again, that we have a Pros versus Joes competitor coming on to talk shop, previewing what his strategy will be in the Pros versus Joes event coming up July 24th, 25th, 26th. I can't remember when Paul's drafting, but maybe he can tell us. Paul, we have you back on. Are you with us now?
Yeah, I'm back.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I dropped offline, so I had to leave my computer, so I'll be talking off the top of my head here. So.
Oh, well, that's perfect because that's what we want. Real honest analysis. Yeah, exactly. Paul, before we lost you there, I just wanted to find out if you could tell the listeners what you do for a living when you're not playing in the FFPC.
Oh, sure. I work third shift. I'm a night worker, so I'm a machinist up here in small town Minnesota. And during the days I have off.
So you always stay on third shift? I mean, there's some shifts where they kind of rotate?
Oh, swing shifts?
Swing shifts.
Swing shifts.
Is that right?
No, I'm always third shift. I like that shift. That works perfect for me, so.
So does that mean when you're doing drafts at night, that's kind of like your morning a little bit?
Usually I got to get into those 7 o'clock draft start times so I can get done in time to go to work usually. So, I got to leave for work probably in about an hour from now. So.
That's great.
That is awesome. So when everybody else is drafting and drinking beer, Paul is having his morning coffee and drinking, which is probably – it speaks to the level of success that you've had in the FFPC over the years. All right, Dave, go ahead.
Hey, Paul, you've already done a couple of football guys players championship drafts this season. Do you happen to have a draft slot that you prefer to select out of, obviously maybe the one or two spot, or do you think it's too early to tell?
Well, so far I've been pretty happy being in the top three. I've been playing around with the zero running back this year, more so than what I have in the past. And the top three, I can come away with, with either Brown, Julio, or Beckham. And then, in the second, in the 2-3 swing, I've been able to get two more of the top 15 guys on my list. So I've been able to get three top 15 receivers out of those spots. And on the off chance that people get really heavy with wide receiver, in the late first and early second, then I'll just take out one of those top running backs that come around to me. I'll adjust on the fly if I have to, but so far I've been able to, come away with a lot of big receivers in those first three rounds. So I've been pretty happy with the top three draft picks.
Yeah, I think that this year more than ever, if you are able to snare those super talented receivers in the top three rounds, you got to consider yourself pretty fortunate given how many people are pounding those receivers early and often this year. Paul, we touched on this in your intro. You've had some near misses over the years. You won the main event consolation in both the FFPC and FFWC, which means your team was crushing it in weeks 14 to 16. And you were good enough to get into the consolation. You just missed being in the championship round where you could have really done a lot of damage. In the super bracket last year in the FFPC, you placed 7th overall. You were in the top three and the top two in a lot of satellites with us last year. It's clear you know what you're doing in order to get your teams right to the brink. How much emphasis do you think that you're going to be putting on drafting players with very good weeks 14 to 16 schedules this season to take you the rest of the way to the top?
Well, to be honest with you, I kind of use that as a tiebreaker. If I've got, three or four guys in a specific tier that come to me and when it's my pick and I'm not really sure, which one of them I want, if they all look pretty even, then I'll look at the strength of schedule thing. Otherwise, if it's a clear-cut person that I really like above all the others, I won't even look at that. So, it's more of a tiebreaker for me, I think.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. That's something that we've talked about over the years with, how much emphasis you do put on that championship week schedule, because a lot of people will just be like, look, I'm just going to get there, and then we'll see what happens when I get there. I can't predict what my team's going to look like in week 14. I can only predict how good I can be getting there. And maybe that's the key is just making those waiver wire pickups over the course of the year, hoping that they actually end up leading you, pushing you the rest of the way over in those championship weeks. Have we talked about that in the past? A while ago we talked about it quite a bit. I don't think we really brought it up how we feel about it in the last two or three years. I don't want to say ignore it. It's something in the back of my mind, but it's real tough for doing a draft and putting too much emphasis on that.
I mean, one of the things is I think over the years, especially the past few years, there hasn't been those dominant defenses like there was in the past where you'd have like three or four dominant defenses and you'd be like, okay, I really don't want to be going against these guys weeks 14, 15, 16. Now it doesn't really matter. It doesn't seem to me like there's these dominant defenses that are just going to crush teams. Maybe a few of them, but I don't know. I don't fear it as much.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way as you, in regards to that. Plus, we have to have the intelligence factor, Dave. I am just not smart enough to be drafting guys with good schedules in weeks 14 to 16 in the actual heat of the moment in the draft. I'm just so often trying to get the best player available. Oftentimes I just, subconsciously or on purpose ignore weeks 14 to 16.
All right, Paul, we're moving on. Enough of this schedule crap.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Bears running game. No Matt Forte. You've drafted Jordan Howard a couple of times. And then we have Jeremy Langford to talk about a little bit. But tell us a little bit about Howard, why you like him. Do you believe in Langford at all, or do you think his 3-point whatever yards per carry last year is proof that he sucks?
Yeah, that's a leading question, Dave, is what we call
yeah,
it in the biz.
I think he
Paul,
was like about 3.6. I think he was like 3.6 yards per rush or whatever. But yeah, I think early on this year, I think Langford is probably going to be the lead dog. But I got a feeling that by the time that the second half of the season rolls around, it's going to be, you know, at least a 50-50, if not Howard being a little bit more of the guy. Because, I mean, Howard's a big guy. He's like 230 pounds. And, you know, John Fox, I think he kind of likes those pounders. And, you know, and that's John Fox's guy that he just drafted. So I think Howard's going to, you know, he's going to get more of the share as the season goes on. And, you know, by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised if he's getting more carries than Langford.
Does it concern you at all that he was drafted with the 150th overall pick, which means that the Bears were fine with letting 149 other picks go by before they took Howard? They didn't trade up so, you know, to get him, and you know, they didn't leap at the opportunity to move into the third round to get him. They're like, now let's take this dude. So what are your thoughts there?
I don't
obviously,
know.
You can talk about Langford's draft position if you want.
I don't. That doesn't really bother me all that. I mean, I'm just not as high on Langford, you know, and to be honest, I'm not drafting Howard as a starter right now anyway. You know, I'm getting him in like the 14th round, so he's about my fifth or sixth running back off the board. And, you know, if he pans out, great. If not, it's not going to be hurt me too much because I'm not definitely not taking him early. I mean, you know, those picks I'm taking him, he's basically just fallen to me, I think. I'm not, you know, I'm not looking to get him, but every time I get around that point of the draft, he's still sitting there, and I was like, okay, well, I'll take him.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, talking about Jordan Howard, because he is – I don't want to say he's free. I mean, a guy who's free in drafts is like an 18th, 19th round pick. Jordan Howard, I mean, you still have to invest like a 13th or 14th rounder to get him on your team. But, Dave, what do you think the likelihood is that we're sitting here in early or mid-October and the people that drafted Langford are like, what was I thinking drafting this guy in the fifth, sixth round or whatever? And then the people who drafted Howard are like, oh, man, Jordan Howard has been fantastic. I mean, they probably won't have played him a whole lot, but in a DE, maybe he has started a couple of times for him, and they paid next to nothing to get him. I think that, the smart play to me in the Bears' backfield right now is getting Howard late and just avoiding Langford, and I think that is the path to the least amount of tears this year in fantasy.
I'm going to give you my top secret. I didn't tell anybody the strategy. This is top secret. Jordan Howard-only strategy. I'm only selecting him at the same pick or later than the Bears selected him in my fantasy draft. That's pick 150.
Okay.
The 1306.
Okay.
That's where I'm taking him, Balky. I will not go ahead of the Bears
when
they took him in the draft. If I can get him at 1306, he's right on my board.
But I haven't really asked your opinion on Jordan Howard a whole lot. He doesn't really fit the profile of a Gerzak running back. So I can't imagine that you'd be too excited about that.
In that range, I'd probably say
okay, all right, fair enough. Paul, we're talking about Jordan Howard, and we're joined by Paul Miley from the FFPC Pros vs. Joes competition, a former main event league champion, consolation winner in the FFPC main event in 2013. Paul, we're talking about Jordan Howard because in a couple of your football guys' drafts this year, you've already got him. So you already own multiple shares of Jordan Howard. Talk a little bit about your drafting strategy to that end. Do you feel that you're trying not to
–
Sorry. I'm very excited talking to Paul. And you know what? They didn't pick that up at all. The listeners don't pick that up. Only we hear that.
Paul, you slamming into the microphone.
Yeah, nobody heard that. Paul, do you feel like you're trying to not draft guys more than one or two times – and sort of diversifying what you do in drafts? Or are you not afraid to load up on a few players of the same player in a lot of leagues?
You know what? I'm not afraid to load up on guys. Each draft I do, I try to not think about the previous drafts too much, you know? So if I end up with the same guy on a lot of teams, you know, that's just the way the ball bounces and I'm going to roll with it. You know, and I'm not too worried about that. You know, for example, a guy like if I'm drafting late this year in the 10th, 11th, and 12th spots, I've seen Adrian Peterson falling all the way back to the end of the first round. And, you know, if he's sitting there when I'm picking, I'm going to probably have AP on a lot of teams this year just because at that point, you know, I'm more than happy to take Peterson. You know, and plus, you know, somebody like that, his handcuff is pretty easy to get too. You don't have to reach too early to get McKinnon. you know, but I'm not worried about getting the same guy in a lot of teams. You know, that's never really bothered me.
I think this is part of the reason, Dave, why Paul's been so successful is because I would be afraid to do that. I mean, there's times in draft.
You were just bragging up your skills earlier about the fishbowl ball.
You know, that was more Twitter bragging me up more than I was bragging myself up.
You were affirming the tweet?
I affirmed it. I approved that message, but I certainly didn't generate it. You know, we draft, you know, which I think I draft like 5 or 6 teams in Kentucky every year. And there's times where I'm on like the 4th or 5th draft. And if I've gotten the same guy, even if it's like an 8th or 9th round pick in the first 3, I will blatantly ignore how I feel about player rankings or how I feel about a guy more so than the other. I will blatantly ignore that and take the guy I actually value lower instead of that guy just to diversify. And just because, listen, my rankings and my feelings, they're not fact. I mean, I've been proven wrong at least once in my life.
But you got to go in and like those players. You got to get your guys involved.
But the thing, yeah, you do have to get your guys, but I feel like I got them at that point in 75% of my leagues. What am I really doing to drive this point home? You know, I just – that's my feelings. Listen.
You got to do a little more alpha bulky.
Paul has won a lot more money doing this than I have. So I will be beta bulky, and he will be alpha Paul.
Assert your manhood. Take that player.
I know. Well, assert yourself and ask Paul the next question here.
All right. Speaking of manhood, Zach Ertz, he's quite a man.
That's quite the segue there. Zach Manhood Ertz.
What do you think of this guy with not many letters in his name? He's the number 9 tight end off the board in the 6th round of FFPC drafts. Do you think that's about right, high or low?
For me, it's kind of high. I'm not a big fan of very many of the Eagle players this year. I think Kelly kind of left a train wreck that's going to happen this year, you know, in Philly. And there's, I'm pretty nervous about pretty much all the Philadelphia Eagle players. You know, I'll probably have a few of them just because, you know, they'll be in a position where I'm comfortable taking them, but I'm not comfortable taking her, you know, in the 6th round this year. That's just too high for me.
Too high for Ertz in the 6th, Balky.
You know, what's interesting about that is...
Well, it's too high for me. That doesn't mean it's too high, period. But for me,
right.
it's too high for me.
So Paul is not taking Ertz in the 6th. The great thing about the 6th round in football guys' drafts, again, if you're drafting right now, I mean, things could change. There's like 4 tight ends, like decent tight ends going in the 6th round, with, you know, alongside Ertz. You have Gary Barnage going in that area. I think that Julius Thomas is also being picked there. And I'm trying to remember who the 4th one was. Oh, Eifert. We talked about this on the show last week. Eifert's actually fallen to the 6th round because of his injury issues.
He's going to keep dropping.
So if you need a tight end in the 6th and you don't like Ertz and you feel like it's too early, I mean, there's other options there that you can go with, which is sort of like the 2nd tier or 3rd tier if you want to put Gronk on a tier all by himself. We have much more from Paul Miley coming up right after these messages. This is the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. I'm Eric Balkin. He's Dave Gerzak. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Paul about the pros versus Joes event he'll be drafting in later on. Coming up in just a little bit. I'm Eric Balkman. He's Dave Gerzak. This is the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. We're talking with former FFPC Main Event League title winner Paul Miley. He's actually going to be competing in the Pros versus Joes event coming up at the end of the month. And Paul, you and your co-manager, Arnie Grabanowski, you're gearing up for it. It's in 2 weeks. You're picking out of the 3 spot right after Jake Seeley from RotoExperts.com, who's picking in the 2 spot in your draft. What can you tell us about the player you're thinking about selecting at the 103 and maybe a player that you're hoping falls to you in round 2?
Well, I'm hoping, since I got the 3rd overall pick, I'm going to probably take whatever one of those top 3 receivers those other 2 guys don't take. That's the plan. You know, so I imagine I'll probably end up with Beckham or Julio Jones, you know, would be my guess. The rest of the draft, you know, and with the 2nd round pick, you know, I'd love to see a guy like Evans slide all the way back to me, but I don't know if that's going to happen. It seems like he's kind of going in the, you know, middle of the 2nd round, maybe even a little earlier than that. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Evans make it all the way back to me. Otherwise, you know, I'll just take another receiver or maybe Miller or Devontae Freeman if one of those guys slide back to me there. You know, we'll see how it goes. You know, but really with Seeley sitting there at the number 2, and I got Cocktails and Dreams at number five. So my plan is in the odd rounds to take the guy that Chad wants, and in the even rounds take the guy that Jake wants.
That's tough, man. Drafting between a guy who's won the overall title in the Pros vs. Joes and then Chad Schroeder, who I believe, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, has won one or two leagues in the FFPC before.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's done pretty good, I think. So
Paul, let's talk about the Bengals a little bit. Balky mentioned Eifert, and news just keeps getting worse and worse, kind of like Hillary's poll numbers today. How are you adjusting with the Bengals pass catchers now that you think now that we know that Eifert's probably going to miss a few games?
I think Boyd makes me a little nervous yet, but I think the guy that's going to benefit, I think Gio Bernard is going to have a pretty big year. I think he's going to catch a lot of balls this year. So, I think he's going to maybe be the take some of those catches that Eifert normally would have been getting. Or that's how I feel about it.
Dalton likes the dump-offs, Bulky.
Yeah, and I feel like Eifert was never like a massive downfield guy anyway. So you think about the underneath stuff. And that could be ticketed for Giovanni Bernard. Boyd, obviously, it's a rookie. He's a rookie. You don't know really what you're going to expect from him. The one thing I am sure about is that Brandon LaFell will catch every seven or eight passes that are thrown to him. So I can't imagine that Dalton's going to look his way too much. But, yeah, I like Bernard this year. I think he's going to be a guy that, especially if you go zero RB and you're drafting receivers at the first four or five picks or receivers and a tight end, I think that Bernard is a guy that could really be a decent RB1, a guy who could be a top 12 running back with all those pass catches that he should be acquiring this year. So I definitely agree with you on that. Paul, let's hit up some emails here from some listeners that had sent them into the show for you to answer tonight. Wes in Beaumont, Texas writes, "How do you feel about trying to handcuff your running backs in high-stakes events? And would you do the same with receivers? Examples would be Sammy Coates with Antonio Brown and Tyler Boyd with A.J. Green." Thank you for the email. That's Wes in Beaumont, Texas. I don't know how you feel about this, Paul. Are you of the ilk that likes to handcuff your running backs? And have you ever handcuffed a receiver before? Would you be looking to do that in this year, especially with all the receivers that you're drafting early?
Yeah, I have handcuffed receivers before. It depends. One of the guys that I would try to get this year, I think, is, if I get Mike Evans, I think I might be looking for Vincent Jackson, just because I don't have to go too early to get him. I don't want to have to, do that too early. I don't want to be reaching for a guy. So, I don't usually worry about it quite as much with receivers, but some of them are just going to be kind of natural. If you're getting Evans in the second and you're sitting in there in the 11th or 12th round and V-Jax is still sitting there, I don't feel like you're reaching at all to pick him up. Why not if that's the, in that situation. But I don't think I'll be taking, Boyd to handcuff A.J. Green. I just don't think I would do that. So, if the situation presents itself and it seems to make sense for me, I'll go ahead and do it. I'm more inclined to maybe do that with running backs. Like I already mentioned with Peterson, McKinnon is a pretty easy handcuff. Le'Veon Bell, if you could take him, then you're sitting there staring at D'Angelo Williams already in the eighth round or whatever, just because you're going to be afraid somebody else is going to take him. And that's I don't like handcuffing running backs that early. So in Le'Veon Bell's case, I would, but it doesn't mean I like taking D'Angelo that early. That's why I'm kind of rather take a receiver at that point, just because I don't have to worry about that.
The old sports betting man adage, of course, Lance Turvis, former co-host of the show, always said, handcuffs are important, but don't feel like you have to cuff your own guys. Draft those handcuffs that have some value with some teams. If you're looking for a running back and you don't own Le'Veon Bell, take D'Angelo Williams. Take Jerick McKinnon. If you don't own Adrian Peterson, those guys could have some value, and certainly area that they're going in. That would make a lot of sense. Draft the talent, because all those guys need is the opportunity. Final email for you, Paul Lee in Laurel Hill, North Carolina. "Hey, Paul, the Giants website stated that Rashad Jennings is expected to get 15 to 18 carries a game this year with Shane Vereen taking over on third downs. Does this make Jennings a steal in your eyes, or do you not put too much stock into this report? Good luck in Pros versus Joes. That's Lee in Laurel, North Carolina. Paul, I'll tell you this right now. You probably are aware of this because you've done some football guys drafts, but Rashad Jennings is usually going solidly in the ninth round this year. Is he a value there, given that he actually could outperform that if this report comes out and is correct? Or are you not putting too much stock into this, given that it's still mid-July and we really don't know how things are going to shake out?
Well, it's funny that that caller brought that up, because in the first football guy draft I did this year, I went four receivers in the first four rounds, and then I ended up drafting Rashad Jennings in the ninth, you know, and I also picked up Geo in the seventh and Deion Lewis in the fifth, you know, so I felt that, I liked Rashad Jennings at that spot. You know, I'll take him all year long if he's sitting there in the ninth round.
Me too. I like Jennings, actually, especially in that area.
It's so weird that if you wanted to start your draft off with four receivers, Dave, and maybe take, you know, Pepper and Delanie Walker, Travis Kelce, or somebody like that in there, and then still get like a top five quarterback, you know, like, you know, Russell Wilson or whoever, you know, you throw in there, you could actually get in the eighth and ninth rounds. Again, not always, but 70% of the time.
I mean, Balky.
You have Rashad Jennings and Justin Forsett. You get Justin Forsett in the ninth. You get Rashad Jennings.
Today you can.
Right now. I think that there's – and this is, by the way, coming from the president of the Paul Perkins fan club, saying that Rashad Jennings should be a guy that you look at in the ninth round. So I think that makes a lot of sense. We say it every year. There's insane values to be had in the football guys' leagues right now in the FFPC satellites. You can – and I think these are two guys that are clear to me that they're going to move up. Get them now while they're hot. As it were. My opinion. Go ahead, Dave.
All right, Paul. One of our favorite questions, or at least mine. We're looking for sleepers and busts. So give us a guy that right now you're really starting to like for 2016 and a player that's being drafted high that you want nothing to do with.
The guy that's getting drafted – actually, there's a couple of guys getting drafted high that I'm not going to touch this year. And one of them is Jordan Reed. I like Reed's talent. I love his talent. I had him on 15 teams last year, but that's because I was getting him in the ninth and 10th round last year. You know, this year in the second round, I'm not going to touch him in the second round. I just, you know, even last year, he missed a couple weeks last year with a concussion, you know, and I think the fantasy community sometimes has a short memory. And I just,
yeah, you're paying,
I just
you're
cannot
full
take,
sticker for Reed.
I just can't take him that early, you know, and it's just too early to be taking a guy that's probably going to miss time. And Dez Bryant makes me nervous this year. I mean, that whole foot issue, I'm just not comfortable using a first-round pick on some. I mean, those speed injuries, those could stick around for a while. And, you know, you see guys sometimes take a couple years to get over foot problems. And, yeah, I just have a hard time taking a guy like that in the first round with that coming off of that type of an injury.
Well, plus Romo's missing like six vertebrae, I think, at this point.
Right.
It might even be more than that. You might be up to a dozen vertebrae missing. Just had them all fused into one. You just got one vertebrae now, Dave. Just one massive, like the world's largest vertebrae.
All right.
He can't bend it all, but Dallas is going to throw their weight behind him. What about some guys that you like, Paul, or at least one guy you like?
A couple guys I like. I like Steve Smith. I just like where you can get him at. You know, you can draft him as your fifth receiver, sixth receiver, you know, in the ninth. Or I saw him go in the 11th round the other day, but usually around the ninth round. But, you know, you can get him as your fifth quarter or wide receiver. And, you know, last year before he got hurt, he was the number 12 receiver in the league, you know, in total
still
points.
Crushing it. Steve Smith,
and,
man.
I just look at the Ravens, and I don't know who else is going to be the wide receiver number one there. You know, it's going to be him, period. You know, and as mean as that guy plays, I just don't see him falling off. You know, I think he's still going to be good. And somebody else I kind of like, and I don't really have any good – I like Michael Thomas for the Saints. I know they've got a ton of guys there. I know they've got Fleener, and you got Fast Willie Snead, and you've got Brandon Cooks in the running backs, but I just like – you know, he's a nice big guy, 6'3", over 210 pounds, and I just think that Michael Thomas is going to surprise some people. I think he's going to have a decent year. You know, maybe at Willie Snead's expense, but I, for some reason, I just kind of like Michael Thomas, and you get him late too. So.
Yeah, you know, Snead is not a pedigreed guy. He just sort of came out of nowhere last year, and now Marcus Colston moves on, and who do the Saints draft in the first round? A guy who has a very similar game, a very similar skill set, and a very similar build, I would say, to Marcus Colston. So you are spot on there, my friend. And you've been spot on all night. Paul, I really appreciate you coming on. Paul Miley, ladies and gentlemen, going to be drafting in the Pros versus Joes. Competition coming up at the end of July. He's a former main event, a league title champion. And, Paul, hopefully this is the year you bust through and you just crush the championship round. I'd love to see it happen. I'll obviously be rooting for you to do so. And, listen, man, when you're drafting in Pros versus Joes, feel free to call in, check in with us, let us know how you think the draft's going. We'd love to talk to you again.
All righty, thank you.
Paul Miley, ladies and gentlemen, of the Sven and Ole franchise. He also drafts solo when he's not with Arnie Grabanowski. He's the Barking Spiders franchise. So if you see him in the football guys' draft rooms.
Barking Spiders. I've seen it plenty of times.
Yep, that's Paul Miley. He was fantastic. We're going to take a break. Come back with your emails right after this on the HSSF Hour. My name is Eric Balkman. His name is Dave Gerzek, the patron saint of fantasy football. We are the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. Just had Paul Miley on, former FFPC main event title winner. What did you think about the guys he likes this year and the guys he doesn't like? Jordan Reed and Dez Bryant. Kind of agree with him on both. I actually like Jordan Reed, but not enough to draft him at his price. And Dez Bryant, I'm just going to find somebody who's healthy at the end of the first.
Yeah, Reed, I mean, you are paying full sticker price for Reed. He did really do well last year. But, yeah, it's... He still does always get hurt and get another concussion. Who knows? I have a real problem with. I think Dallas is a team that is going to go 4-12. I think Romo's going to get hurt again, miss a bunch of games, and Dez is going to suffer because of that. And then again, I always go back to, I've owned Dez in Dynasty. I always go back to the fact that the stupid coaches always put him on the outside. Just, hey, run downfield. Run over here a little bit. It's like they never move him around. They do anything. Why is it always like the old guys like Fitz? It's like, oh, we're going to move Fitz around and get him open now that he's old. Why don't you do that with, like, a stud player and get him open like T.O. used to always over the middle? Anyway, okay, there's my rant on that. The coaches are awful. Organization not so good.
Before you get to the good parts or the good guys, based on your analysis of the Dallas 2016 season, you're not going to be taking Ezekiel Elliott anywhere, are you?
If he falls, but he's not going to fall, so probably not going to take him very often.
I mean, like mid-first, we saw him in the Scott Fishbowl go at the 101. Some of these leagues.
And that's the thing is, I mean, like, you still have other players that, you know, he's still a rookie. I mean, he still could bust, you know. He's still got to go through the rigors of a 16-game season. By week 10 or 11, he might hit the rookie wall. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe he's awesome, but, I mean, I think there's maybe a 20%, 30% chance that he returns that first-round value. And I think, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that there's – it's not good enough. You know, you have – I'd rather take a guy like AP – I've never been the hugest AP supporter, mostly because of what he did.
Hold that thought. Don't talk about Peterson yet, because we have an email coming
right
up, and I think it's going to be an interesting one. I'm not trying to call you out here, but you kind of wrote Steve Smith off last year. You said you wouldn't be taking him anywhere. I don't really remember you taking him in a lot of drafts, but you were kind of off the Steve Smith bandwagon last year.
Which I was proven wrong at first, but then
proven right.
But overall, it was wrong. I think if I can't use the fact that he got hurt as an excuse for my not calling it correctly.
But even if you were wrong about the production aspect, weren't you right because he ended up getting hurt? I mean, nobody would say that drafting Steve Smith at that spot last year was correct based on the end of season production.
I feel like that's a weak excuse though.
But it's correct. I mean, that's what happened, you know? I mean, you can lament being wrong. Oh man, I should have drafted that guy or whatever, but when it's at the end of the season, you're happy you didn't if he got hurt.
Yeah, I was. I was actually kind of happy when he got hurt. It was kind of like
– not happy that he got hurt, but happy
I was happy
that
for
you,
my teams that
right.
he got hurt, but I was – you know, I was like – what do they call that? I don't know, whatever. melancholy or whatever, where I just – you know, I wasn't told – because I love the guy.
Oh, yeah, what is that word?
Whatever.
Anyway, but I
– a little conflicted, which is not the word
right,
I was looking
right.
for. Michael Thomas, I don't really know if I like that one as much because of, you know, Fleener, who you love, and Willie Snead, and, of course, Cooks. So I'm a little bit, again, rookie wide receivers without a clearly defined role. If he's a third WR, I don't see him as being anything more than the fourth target and maybe the fifth offensive option behind Ingram.
Right. Again, I have to stop you there because you keep bringing up all these guys we have emails on. So rather than have you talk about it, let's actually answer these emails regarding these same players.
If you've got a question for Eric Dave or tonight's guest, send them a tweet at HSFFHour on Twitter. Email the show at HighStakesFantasyFootball@gmail.com. Post it in the chat room during the broadcast. Hashtag your tweet with HSFF or just smack Eric in the head. That's HighStakesFantasyFootball@gmail.com or at HSFFHour on Twitter.
You bring up an interesting point, Dave, and I feel I don't know if it's high stakes guys are still living in Web 2.0 or Web 1.0 or whatever it is. We get a ton of emails. We get a tweet or two from time to time. 30% of them are from @2Pack. No, if people don't say that, I'll probably get some tweets like that on Friday.
Hey, no show this week.
Bought InstaBlock.
Hey, we're at HSFF Hour. If you can be concise in your questions and limit it to 140, it'd be less than that because you got to tag us or, you have to put our handle in there, but or whatever the kids say.
Stupid Twitter.
Be concise. Tweet us. We'll answer your questions. That's no problem. First email, good friend of the show, Drew Maselli. Dave, I don't know if you remember this last week. We got into the subject of the work ethic of East Coast versus West Coast. Drew Maselli actually sent us an email this week. While sitting there listening, enjoying the podcast, you guys mentioned the caliber of work that is done on the West Coast as opposed to the rest of the country.
I thought he said it to say anything.
You thought I might disagree. I can't agree more. The West Coast work ethic sucks, and so many people out here are looking for the handouts instead of doing a job well. Please destroy this email after reading. It can't get into the wrong hands. Who knows who is reading this?
Unless you broadcast.
So, of course, I'm going to read it on the show. That's just the way I roll. And I feel a little bit bad sticking up for the West Coast workers last week because I said, listen, they're good, hardworking people. They just do it a different – I think that West Coast people get a bad rap because they're 3 hours behind the East Coast. So these East Coast people are 3 hours into their workday, and these West Coast people are just rolling in.
Yeah.
The West Coast people are still working when the East Coast guy is getting hammered at happy hour. You know what I mean? So I think that there's a little bit of disconnect there.
I think the only disciplined people on the West Coast are the financial services employees because they have to get up.
Right.
The stock market opens at 9:30 Eastern. So it's like, and that's not even talking about some of the other things. You have to get up on and get up and ready on the news. So you better be ready at 6:30 in the morning. And some of these guys, you better be at the office at 6:30
because
their clients are calling. Like, hey, I need you to sell this or do that. Or they're emailing or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they're tweeting. Hey, tweet. Sell the Apple stuff.
And then they're done early.
Buy Nintendo.
Yeah, buy Nintendo, indeed. In fact, let us right into it, Dave. Jared in Alexandria, Maryland. Hello, Pikachu and Jigglypuff.
Great.
Which one are you? You know Pokemon better than me.
I do not know Pokemon very well. Pikachu is the yellow one.
Right. Do your daughters play the Pokemon Go or no?
Yeah, they
do.
But they're not as mobile. They're not mobile like that.
Do you guys have any around your house here?
I don't think
any. At all? No?
None there super close.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
We live out in the country here, Valky.
Yeah, I guess. Roto World had an update on Brandon Cooks about how the Saints beat writer views his floor as 1,200 yards. He's still going. He's still going in the early second. My draft so far, would you guys feel, as Balky likes to say, comfy with that price? That is Jared and Alexander Mary. Jared, thank you for the email. And I am that drafting at the end of the first round in an FFPC league. If I take a receiver in the first, totally on board with taking Brandon Cooks at like the 201, 202, 203. I think that's a solid place for where he's going right now. The upside that you have of New Orleans having that elite passing game, having Drew Brees back, and really Cooks as being the most reliable option there. I mean, obviously, sans the demigod Kobe Kleiner, you have Cooks on the outside and moving all around. I think that he's going to have a great season this year. I think 1,400 yards is not out of the question, 90 catches not out of the question, and he's the type of guy that maybe goes for 11 or 12 touchdowns as well this year. So I'm definitely on board for Cooks in the second round. What's your opinion on Cooks as an early second round pick?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, some of these statements, it's like, okay, he's a second year receiver. He had 1,138 yards last year. So do you think he's going to be a little better this year?
But that's his floor is what the beat writer's saying.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's not like that astounding of a statement. I think he's a great value there, and it's not a value per se because you're not getting a lot
but
of value.
But he's a solid pick.
Yeah, because of the fact that he has the upside to really explode this year. Maybe he has 100 catches. We don't really know. He could conceivably have 100 catches for 1,700 yards and 13, 14 touchdowns with Breeze being that great of a quarterback. He's getting older, but he's still pretty darn good.
Yeah. In fact, the biggest threat to Cooks, Kobe Fleener, probably in that New Orleans Saints offense this year. I mean,
so once Fleener drops a few touchdowns in the end zone during preseason, Reason will not have to trust him. He'll throw it back to Cook.
Frankly,
that happened a couple years ago.
Frankly, I hope Fleener does do that, and maybe he'll drop out of that 103, 104 area where Fleener's being picked right now. After people listen to this show, and realize that they have to take Fleener ahead of Gronk.
Maybe they should realize, why is Fleener on the free agent waiver wire in my rookie draft? Well,
yeah,
because he's sucked his entire career with Andrew Luck as his quarterback up until now.
Yes, and
not like he's going to get a good quarterback.
I'm not going to beat the Fleener horse to death, if for no other reason that you can't beat Kobe Fleener to death because he is that strong and awesome. So be that as it may, I still like Cooks this year. Moving on. Okay, Mark in Atlanta, Georgia, with Adrian Peterson allegedly still running 4.5 40s and wanting to play at a high level until his mid-30s, do you guys consider him a in Dynasty right now? Can't wait for the PBJ shows. That's Mark in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you for the email, Mark. Adrian Peterson, Dave, 30-year-old, decrepit, awesome, chiseled, old balls Adrian Peterson. Is he a buy? Is he the type of guy you should be looking to acquire in your dynasty league right now?
If you can get him cheap enough, I think so.
What would be cheap? I mean, what would you?
Future first, if you have a team that's even contending at all. If you can pay a future first, even though 2017 is a big year, I think it's definitely worth it.
You would give up the one? Let's say you own the 106 for like somehow,
sure,
whatever. You'd give that up for Adrian Peterson right now?
If you own someone else's first round pick,
right,
and you
right.
feel like they're going to be like the 106, if you feel like that could put you over the top, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about league titles, champions, banners hanging forever, all that
right.
crap. I look at him as an investment for being a top 12 running back for one season, and anything you get beyond that is a bonus. Like, I traded for Charles last year.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it.
It turned out it was a bad trade. But I'm actually looking, I'm like, I own Charles now in Carrington. And the trade was a bad trade overall. But I'm pretty happy about having Charles
right, yeah,
this year. And,
yeah,
and he might be around next year. Who knows?
Listen, I've said on this show many times that Peterson is either a machine or a cyborg, and the rules that apply to human physiology simply do not apply to Adrian Peterson. I think that he could be a guy who is rushing for 1,000, 1,100 yards when he's 34 years old. I think that's entirely possible.
So he's 31 right now. He turned 31 in March. Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame running back, so I think it's definitely possible.
Now, the problem with this is the Peterson owner really prepared to give him up for like a mid-first-round pick? And that's what the problem you run into. I think that you need to find Peterson on a guy that is sort of like on a team that's sort of like fringy, like, I don't know, should I rebuild? Should I still go for it? That's the team that you got to target.
Wait till they start out 1-3.
And get Peterson. Well, yeah, I mean, you could. Yeah. But, I mean, I would be proactive and try to get the deal done now.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, if they start off 1-3, you can actually get a great deal on Angel.
I'd probably offer a little bit less. I mean, I'd offer, second or third and see what they say. I mean, maybe
the introductory offer, as it were.
No, that's kind of cheap. You know what? I wouldn't offer that. I would offer the first.
What's your opinion for redraft? He's going in the same area as Brandon Cooks. Would you be taking Adrian Peterson in the early second round?
Sure, I would take him.
Okay. All right. I don't know.
Not necessarily over Cooks. Maybe I would. I mean, Peterson's one of the first, though, still.
I've seen him go, actually, in a Football Guys draft a couple of days ago. He fell like the 206 or 207, something insane like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, again, I'll probably be using receivers or utilizing those early picks and receivers this year. If somebody wanted to take Adrian Peterson at the 202, you have my blessing. I really can't fault you for doing that. And honestly, it's probably a great pick. Al in Portland, Oregon. Are you guys as confident as Sean Payton is that Drew Brees isn't slowing down in 2016? What are the chances he finishes as a top five quarterback again? Dave, he is going, and not always, but on average, I would say, as the fifth quarterback off the board in Football Guys drafts right now. So the high stakes players are still drafting him as a top five quarterback. Sean Payton, I mean, I don't know how much of that is coach speak. Obviously, if he's your guy, you're going to say, he's not slowing down. We're going to be great. We got all these weapons for Drew Brees. Kobe Fleener's awesome. He's going to be saying all these things. Now, while we only know that Fleener being awesome is the only fact in what I just said, I think that there is a certain amount of concern you have to have given where Brees is at the point he's at in his career. But to me, I still like him as like a sixth round pick in FFPC drafts. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't been spending much time researching Brees, but you know, he threw for almost the same number of yards. Actually, he threw for
more yards.
No, a little bit less than the prior season, but he missed a game. On a yards per game basis, he's, you know, it's like, okay, 2011, he averaged 342, then 323, 322, then 309 in 2014, then 324 last year. So it's like, you know, he's effectively playing about at the same level as 2012, 2013 last year.
That 2014 year, that was when he was at 309?
Oh, yeah.
Did Jimmy Graham...
And then Cooks was a rookie that year.
Okay, Cooks was...
And Jimmy Graham was there.
But wasn't he hurt? I feel like he missed a bunch of games, too.
I don't remember, maybe. Okay. Maybe he could have been.
Well, I think what we're seeing here is there is a pattern of consistency, and I don't think the warning signs are there that 2016 is going to be the year that Brees falls off the face of the earth. I don't see it.
Quarterback is deep enough, too. You can take Brees and then grab someone that's fairly all right. You know, grab like the 13th or 14th or 15th quarterback off the board, like a younger guy, and then you'd be fine.
Yeah. Final email tonight. Hello, St. Dizzle and Balky. It sure seems like the past couple of months, Balky has been talking up Tevin Coleman. And then I see him tweet out that he drafted Devontae Freeman at the 212 in his Scott Fishbowl draft. WTF. Was this Matt Schauff Jedi mind tricks or what? That's Jim in Flint, Michigan. So I'll explain myself with Freeman here. Feel free to disagree.
I have a partner and I have no choice.
No, because I feel like we've been collaborating really well and there haven't been any, you know, virtual fist fights yet. That could be coming.
You in shock going
yeah.
at it?
Oh, yeah. It could be nasty. I mean, the slap fights that we would have over picking Josh Ferguson in the 19th round. You don't want to – I mean, that's not suitable for work.
That's funny. Just makes me think of like an FSTA conference like that. That's what a fight would be like.
Oh, yeah,
to
totally.
Broke out there.
Yeah.
Just a couple fantasy nerds.
You know, flapping their hands. And then, you know, he would go crying to Lenny, and I would go crying to you and Alex.
And
shake hands. Just shake hands. You guys are friends. You shouldn't be doing this to each other.
Like the 60-year-old former cop security guard that's totally out of shape. Like,
right.
Totally, like, separate the two, and then they both go flying. They go flying in either direction.
That's pretty much how, and honestly, it could be like somebody much younger and smaller than that to send us flying. Anyway, I don't want to throw Matt Schauff under the bus. He's a buff, strong guy, and he's really smart.
I'm sure Matt is, yes.
So Devontae Freeman at the 212. So this is a different scoring format, obviously, than FFPC drafts. And running
really, really annoying.
The scoring system is annoying?
Yes, it's annoying.
Okay. Well, be that as it may.
Here's all this extra crap we're going to do.
Right.
Okay, so you can flip the quarterback, and then, like, tight ends get 1 point, and then you get a quarter of a point for a carry for running backs. It's like, dude, how am I going to figure all this crap out?
Yeah, it's tough. Well, I'll tell you how we figured it out. I have my own draft board I'm using, and normally I would make a Draft Sharks MVP board, but I chose not to because I knew Matt would be doing that, and that's how he's drafting out. So he plugged in all those values, the scoring system, the rosters, the number of teams, and has the great Draft Sharks rankings going off with that. So that sort of – I mean, it's like any draft. I mean, you get three or four guys you're considering when it's up at your spot, and Freeman was a guy we were hoping that would fall to us. We didn't think he would, and he did. And yes, I like Tevin Coleman this year. He's on the Blake Carrington Dynasty team for me, so I obviously like him. That doesn't mean that I think Freeman is all of a sudden going to be, you know, like the 2015 version of Justin Forsett, where he just falls off the face of the earth. I think that Freeman is still – I mean, obviously you get the quarter of a point for carry, so that's going to help out Freeman. He caught 70 passes last year, so it's not like – he wasn't a part of the passing game either. He's the offense runs through him and Julio Jones. He's going to be a pretty big staple in Atlanta. And the way running backs are flying off the boards, it made sense to grab a running back there. We took Doug Martin at the 301 then, so those were being our top two picks. We actually, I mean, we kind of thought we were going to take Martin and somebody else. We didn't think Freeman was going to fall.
Right, yeah.
Of course, Anthony Amico from RotoViz talked about how he considered Freeman at the 206, and then he took Lacy after we took Freeman. He took Lacy at the whatever it was, the 307.
That seems pretty late for Lacy, too, aren't
it? Right. And
who are these morons? Are they all look at draft?
Well, apparently, me and Chauff are two of the morons.
No, who are the other morons in your league?
Jeff.
Don't call him out, I guess, because I think,
Well, okay, then I won't call him out.
Trust me, my team sucks, so what do I care?
So anyway, so that's the reason I took Freeman. And anybody who asked me this year if you want to take him in the second round, I think that's totally fine. I have no problem with it. I would not take him in the first round, but I think that kind of goes without saying, given that I haven't really seen him go in the first round of any draft this year so far. So you don't like your Scott Fishbowl team?
I don't know. I can tell you what it is if you want. I mean, I don't mind public ridicule. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I have Cam Newton. I took him into 107, which normal. This is what makes me not happy, is because I don't like taking quarterbacks early ever.
Right.
But because quarterbacks, you can
flex one.
You can flex them, and then they get all those extra points
right.
or whatever. What are they
called? Rushing attempts?
Rushing attempts.
Yeah.
So Cam is a logical pick there. I took Jamal Charles in the second round. I think Charles is going to bounce back. I actually kind of like him. I don't even know who I took in the third round. Carlos Hyde, maybe?
Oh, yeah, you took Hyde. Yeah.
I took Hyde, and then at some point I took Bortles, and then at some other point I took Brandon Marshall, then probably Jordan Matthews, then DeMarco Murray, and then Devontae Parker.
Ooh, DeMarco Murray, interesting.
Yeah, you know, he was in it was the seventh round, like 706 or whatever.
Okay, fair enough.
707. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just not that excited about it, about the team. I mean, maybe it'll be good. When I look at having these quarterbacks, I mean, whatever. I don't know.
It's tough when we're conditioned to waiting on quarterback. You know, for all these years, and then you play a contest like this, and quarterbacks are extremely valued. Give you an idea of my team so far. So Antonio Brown, 101. Devontae Freeman, Doug Martin, and then
you have, and just having Freeman and Brown, it's like having these two like stud guys. See, I just don't have that luxury on the team because Cam is my so-called stud, but I don't really care about that.
Yeah, I got you.
So go ahead.
And then the 4-5 turn, we took Golden Tate,
nice,
and Tyrod Taylor. Because of the rushing aspect, because we knew he wouldn't get back to us at the 6-7, and he made a lot of sense there.
Yeah.
And then it came back to us at the 6-7, and we took Frank Gore as our third running back.
Sigmund Bloom took Frank Gore, maybe.
Don't talk about Sigmund Bloom taking Frank Gore, because he was blowing the Frank Gore trumpet last year to anybody who would listen.
Or he's still tuning it out.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, you know, he was talking about Gore was such a great value in the third or fourth round. And I don't know too many people who are excited who got him in the third or fourth round at the end of the season. And Gore still finishes a top 12 running back, you know.
Yeah.
So it's insane how that works. But so Gore is our third running back, and then we took my boy Ryan Tannehill at the 7-1.
You have three quarterbacks.
No, we have two: Taylor and Tannehill.
Sorry. I thought you had somebody else. Okay, so all right.
No, we're gonna flex out Antonio Brown at quarterback and see how that goes.
That's good.
That's our squad so far. Anybody who wants to follow along, I mean, obviously our Twitter feeds are posting our picks. You can follow along with the whole Scott Fishbowl at scottfishbowl.com, and then the hashtag is SFB480. So check that out. And you know, right around the time those SFB drafts are wrapping up. Pros versus Joes.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that'll be very exciting. That starts July 24th. We're broadcasting all of those right here on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. That is going to do it for our show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Give you a preview of what's going on. Obviously, no show this Friday because I will be enjoying, I think it's Five Finger Death Punch is closing it out on Friday night. So I'll be very excited to see that. Myself and Two-Packer will be there. Our good friend Kurt, I believe, is going to be making an appearance there, so get to party with them. Very exciting stuff. So that's why there's no show this Friday.
I will not be attending Rock USA because I looked at the band lineup and I identified two bands that I recognized.
Yeah.
Probably 40.
I totally get that. That makes sense. There's a pit this year, by the way. Did I tell you that?
I mean, you could just invent a name and that's like one of the bands. Hey, Turdhead is playing at 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, Turdhead.
Turdhead, yeah. Did you hear their latest album? Yeah, pretty good.
What's their latest album called? You know what it's called?
No.
I'm just curious. Like, you came up with such a great band off the top. Like, okay. So next Friday, we'll be back to our normal time, our normal day of the week. And we'll have two-time main event league champion and Pros vs. Joe player Jay Flake will be on the show coming up. That is next Friday, ladies and gentlemen. So be sure to tune in for that. That'll be a good one. It'll be the last show before the Pros vs. Joe's drafts. I want to thank Paul Miley, the FFPC, Rob, Bryce, and you for listening in on a Wednesday night. Dave, I want to thank you for accommodating my schedule and doing the show with me tonight. That
was
awesome.
So much fun.
That was awesome. So Jay Flake next Friday. Drafts and Football Guys Players Championship teams this weekend. We've got plenty of satellites going on as well. Put this knowledge to good use. Paul Miley was great. Take advantage. Your way too early weekend starts now.
This has been another episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com that was broadcast live and heard around the world. Eric and Dave will be back next week with more analysis, interviews, and advice from a guest much smarter than they are. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again next week.
I'm just curious what the two bands you've heard of.
I think Slipknot.
Slipknot and Alice in Chains?
Yep.
No. All right. Well, I'll just have to play it.
Slipknot, Alice in Chains are for sure the two members.
Okay. It's going to be great. I wish you could come.